Well, we've got open lines for you this hour, but at the top of the hour, when the program first started a few hours ago, I was giving you stories of how people have just done some wacky things. I mean, unbelievable things, and they always seem to happen around the holiday season. One of the things I want you to do when you call in on open lines is to share some of those stories with us that you have witnessed yourself, wherever you might have been, a restaurant, a shopping mall, in a car, people who are just whacked out doing these very weird, bizarre things. And I mean, you talk about robbing the Bellagio in Las Vegas, taking $2 million worth of chips. You don't think they're going to be waiting for that person when he comes back, even if he comes back at the tune of $100 a day? Because after the second day, they're going to say, who is this guy? I mean, it's just weird stuff. Or in Dallas, somebody drops a baby into a boiling pot of water. I mean, just unbelievable things that are going on. So share some of those stories with us with Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. And here we go. Open Lines begin. Let's go to Tom in Santa Rosa, California to get things going. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, George. Thank you for having me on. It was a good show. I was enjoying it. The reason I was calling, though, was someone's been tweeting for Julian Assange off of his Twitter feed, and I've got it posted, but they said the WikiLeaks page is back up. And I had sent you the phone number for his lawyer last night, too, in an email, if you got that.
Send it again, then, because okay. I didn't get that.
Okay, well, I've got his Twitter feed linked into mine, along with the whistleblower act they're trying to change, and also net neutrality is linked into I got a Twitter.com/toxicreverend. Ian had me on as a guest in September. But okay. There's a lot going on with that, which includes with Julian Assange, they want to change the whistleblowing laws. And then there's the whole net neutrality setting up like a row of dominoes like Alex Jones was talking about. It's kind of scary times we live in right now.
It was in the Air Force shutting down or making 25 websites unavailable to people.
Putin, I think it was, came out a few days back and said, you call this democracy. And I was like, yeah, there's the Russians saying it too. You know, it's some really strange times we're living in. But thank you. I'll resend the emails and hopefully you can get maybe his lawyer or even him on as a guest when he gets out. They said that the Swedish are putting a hold on it because his bail is up. He can be bailed out, but now they're trying to hold him, and it's going to be heard in a day or two.
They're going to, exactly. All right, thanks, Tom. Definitely. Send it to me again. Next up, we go to Tammy, east of the Rockies in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello, Tammy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks a lot, George. I have a couple of questions about the Jim Mars surveillance show you had.
Yes.
The first one, what would it take for us to be able to take all these surveillance cameras they have watching us and put them in every person's office and every government building in the U.S.?
I love it. I don't think they'd like that, would they?
No. And also another question. How long have the people needed to have the permission of the government and even buy a permit to conduct a peaceful protest?
How long?
We've had to ask them, can we have a protest? And then you have to spend money on a permit to do it, and they get to tell you whether you can or can't.
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, when they sign the Declaration of Independence and then when they put the Constitution together, I believe that they had the fortitude to think about a peaceful protest.
That's right.
Without permits.
Uh-huh. Well, if you find out, can you let us know?
Okay. We'll check into that.
Okay, thanks.
All right, Tammy. Uh-huh. Thanks for calling Coast to Coast. We've got Mike in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It's cold up there yet, Michael?
Oh, freezing.
Freezing. We had it in St. Louis. It's still cold. It was like about 10 degrees today. Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you don't have to go out of the house, you know, try not to.
Stay in, keep your radio on, and just chill.
Oh, that's right. You know, George, I look forward to, you know, listening to your show every night, you know.
Thank you.
So I really appreciate, you know, what you do. Hey, I wanted to talk or just make a couple comments. Way at the beginning of the show, you mentioned a little bit about the cell phones and, like, turning on the camera on the cell phone. And, you know, I always wondered why on these cell phones – they don't put like a cover that covers the lens of that camera, just like on a real camera. You know, there's a little slide you can cover the lens so that lens doesn't get scratched or dirty, and so that's probably why these companies don't put a cover on that cell phone camera lens, just so that, you know, so that camera probably can be activated and kind of watch you. I've definitely read stuff on the internet about that, and I've also heard they can activate the mic inside your phone too without
you
even knowing.
What we're beginning to hear, and I think as technology gets even better, they're going to be able to do all kinds of things.
Absolutely. You know, this might sound really crazy, but, you know, actually what I do is I take my cell phone apart, and I take the mic out of the cell phone, and then I put it back together, and obviously you're going to be thinking, well, you can't use your cell phone then. Well, you can. I plug my earpiece in. So, you know, the earpiece has a built-in mic, which, and this goes to a show from last week, it's safer because then the cell phone isn't up to my head. You know,
that's true.
I use the earpiece. So there's a lot of information on the internet about that. You know, if you would just Google cell phone spying, it's amazing what's out there.
Now, let me ask you this, Michael, too.
Sure.
Are you starting to see more whacked out people than ever before? I mean, just doing bizarre things.
Yeah, there's a lot out there. I can't say specifically if I've seen anything really odd lately, but you know, yeah, there's all kind of crazies out there.
Well, there's many. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to Manuel in Stockton, California. Good morning. Hey, Manuel. Hi.
Hey, George. Good to see you, or hear you anyway.
Well, maybe you do see me. Maybe you have a camera and you can spot me or something, huh?
You know, I think that's pretty brilliant. Why don't they put covers on the little mini cams?
Yeah, you just put it right across. Yep.
Or you can even make a little cover, like they used to make for the stereos.
Yes.
Yeah. The reason I called, I was thinking about this Bellagio thing. Couldn't the guy just launder the chips?
Yeah, but how is somebody going to go in there? Even if you go in stages, how are they going to take in those many chips without them watching? You know, in some cases they ask for your card, right? You have like a player's card there. And
yeah. I got one to one of the casinos here in the foothills. Yeah.
And they know if you've won. They know if you've lost. So if you show up with a couple $1,000 in chips, they're going to look at the card and go, there's no record of this person winning. They're going to catch you right there.
Well, unless there's RFID in these things, and, you know, RFID is pretty much everywhere nowadays.
Well, they have something in these chips. That's true, because they can verify whether they're legitimate chips or not, and they obviously are because the guy took them from the Bellagio. But I wonder if you can track them.
Well, I was thinking, why can't the guy just put them on the black market for like 50 cents, 10 cents on the dollar? But if there's a way to keep track of them, like you're saying, what's the whole point of going in there to begin with?
I know it. I mean, this guy wasn't thinking at all. And I mean, and he went in with a gun, so now it's armed robbery. And they're going to catch him. He's on video. They probably got his license. If he was smart, he took his license off his motorcycle, but I'm not sure he was that smart.
I don't think he was that smart. Hey, I do have one bizarre thing, which is more sad than bizarre, I think.
Uh-oh, what happened?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was taking my niece up to Sacramento. Her little brother was in the hospital. And there's a main street and the big hospital up there, Davis Medical Center. It's on Stockton Boulevard. So I'm on Stockton Boulevard. It's a four-lane street, two lanes both ways, with a divider. So we just got off the freeway, and we're driving through town. And she has better eyes than I do. I mean, she's 18 years younger than me. So she noticed, she was 15 at the time. She notices something up in the distance. And I see police cars up there.
All right.
And then I noticed there's a guy doing gymnastics in the divider.
Gymnastics?
Yeah, but let's just say they were X-rated gymnastics.
He was nude.
Yeah. Totally bizarre.
I assume they took him away.
I certainly hope so. I don't know what the guy was on. He had to be on something.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt. Hey, I was coming home one night when I was doing my local show years ago, and there was somebody lying down on the freeway. It's a three-lane highway, and they were lying down on the freeway. I mean, I was in St. Louis. I was not in that lane, but if I was in that lane, I would have run him. I would have gone right over him, and he was there, and his friends were there giggling at him. And I'm saying, what an idiot. You know, that's definitely a story the next morning, you know? Guy gets run over by a car.
That's sad.
Okay, Manuel, thanks for calling. And keep in mind, live programming on Christmas Eve next week and on Christmas night. Let's go to Jane International Line in Ontario, Canada. Hey, Jane, how are you?
Not bad. Good morning. How are you?
Good.
I wanted to share, I guess, a scary story.
All right.
And the details are kind of important in the story to give you the full shivers at the end. I was younger. I was about 18 years old, and I lived alone, and I lived a high-risk life, I guess you could say. I partied a lot, didn't have many responsibilities. And I lived above a ravine, and at the bottom of the ravine was a river that led to our main sewage plant treatment plant for the town. And if you were sitting in my living room in the summertime when it was really hot, once in a while, you would get a waft of the worst smell you can imagine, pretty much like a dead body smell. So I'm telling you this because it's important at the end. But if you were to actually drop a dead body off down in that river, nobody would ever find it. Nobody would ever suspect anything was there because we were used to the smell.
Uh-huh.
So anyhow, one night, I was on the phone about 1:30 in the morning. And the dog I had started barking, and it was a bark that I've never heard him make before. And he kept running down the hallway in the apartment, and the hallway was really long because my apartment was on the corner. And if you were on the balcony, it was a 40-foot balcony, the length of the entire apartment. And if you were on it, you had access to my bedroom window, bathroom window, kitchen window, and then living room. And he kept running down the hallway and jumping up at the living room door to the balcony, biting. And then he came back down the hallway, jumped in my face, and he had his fur standing up. He had spit coming out. His teeth were showing, and it was like nose to nose. And his eyes didn't even look brown anymore. They actually looked like instant cataracts.
Wow.
They actually fogged over.
He was going ballistic, yeah.
And I thought, oh, my God, almost like that. I thought he was either possessed or that he had rabies.
Rabies.
And I started begging with him and pleading to stop, you're scaring the poop out of me. And he whipped his head back, almost like The Exorcist, and ran back down the hallway, started biting at the balcony door again, and the noises resembled that of a bear, not a dog. And I thought, okay, since I live on the first floor, not the ground level, but one floor up, maybe somehow a skunk or a raccoon or something got up on the balcony, and that's what he's making this big fuss out of.
Right, and he senses it or something.
Right. So I got on my knees because my bed was against the bedroom window. Got up on my knees on the bed, and I was going to put my cheek on the window to look down the balcony, thinking I would see maybe an animal. And as I got on my knees, I could feel the cold from the window. I was just about to get my cheek on that window when my dog ran back down the hallway at top speed and actually took me out, took me flying off the bed. And I landed at the wall, and I had my knee. I was hugging my knees, and he was face to face with me again with his teeth and the spit and everything. And I started crying and pleading with him that he's got to stop. And about 10 minutes, 15 minutes went by, and he finally did come out of this this fit. And I laid on the bed all for the remainder of the night. He nudged me and would do this light growl. And in the morning, when it was time to go, when it was time to get up, I used to always grab a little shopping bag, grab any garbage in the living room or kitchen or bathroom, put it out on the balcony, and then when it was time to go outside with the dog for pee-pee, I'd go back on the balcony, bring the bag down, and put it in the main garbage bin.
Okay.
So I proceeded with daily routine, and I put the bag out on the balcony, and when I did, I remember having to step over something, but I didn't look down to see what it was. And the weirdest part of this whole story is that when I did step over this item, I could feel this stabbing pain in my left shoulder and almost like something pierced my lung. I know that sounds bizarre, but anyhow, I remember thinking, wow, that hurts. It almost felt like I was stabbed. And then when I went to come off the balcony, I remember stepping over the item again, but this time I actually looked down. And the reason that he was throwing that fit all night was because when I looked down, there was a 10-inch butcher knife sitting at my door. So all night that he went nuts was to let me know this is a life or death matter, that, you know, there's some man on the balcony with a knife. And then the growl all night must have been because the weapon was still there. So I called the cops, even though the event had already taken place. And they, showed up. They asked me, why didn't you call 911? And I said, well, what would I have said? Come quick, dog barking. I mean, I couldn't see anything. I didn't know what was there. And he said to me, the officer said, I know you're going to make fun of me, but I'm telling you, your dog's not a regular tongue-hanging-out, tail-wagging dog. He has character and personality. He said, I bet you he was making noises last night that you've never heard before. And I said, oh, God, yeah, he sounded like a bear. And he said, well, if had you called 911, they would have easily been able to translate that these noises weren't that of just an everyday bark. And he said, we would have, you know, we would have been here pretty early, right? And they took the weapon, and at the time, fingerprints yielded nothing. There was nobody that matched it, et cetera. It was about a decade later that I found out it was actually a serial killer and rapist.
No.
Who had already, he was almost reaching his 30th rape victim and about the fourth murder victim. So, I mean, I may have been able to actually have prevented maybe two deaths after that, but, I mean, that's hindsight, you know, nothing I could do at this point. And coincidentally, he's not the only serial killer that I've actually been a pane of glass away from. I actually met the most notorious serial killers in Canada, the Paul Bernardo and Carla Homolka.
What do you mean you met them?
I actually met them, like talked to them. This was prior to their arrest, obviously. And I was in Niagara Falls with my girlfriend, and we were standing outside of a haunted house that you go in and get scared. And I remember nudging my girlfriend, saying, you've got to check out this guy and woman coming towards us. And the reason was because they stood out of thousands of people. They stood out because I couldn't tell you what it was except this. They stood out, the glow, their looks. I mean, she was gorgeous. He was gorgeous. So I nudged her, and I said, check these two out. And when they came, as they were walking towards us, they actually stopped right up to her and my girlfriend and I, out of all the people there, and said, hi, and they asked how we were doing. They asked us if we were going in the haunted house and if we liked being scared, and at one point offered that they would accompany us.
Oh, and, I'm sure they would. And you wouldn't come out, of course. You go in and you don't come back.
What's that? Yeah, no, exactly. And when they did get arrested and he was on the front page of our newspaper, I remember I was getting so irritated and frustrated that I could not remember where I knew that face from. And I kept asking my girlfriend, we must have met this guy. And she kept saying, no, you think so only because he looks like your current boyfriend.
Well, eventually, Jane, you remembered where you saw him. And what are the odds of running into three serial killers? That defies logic. We'll be back. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, perhaps one of those stories that will truly affect you for many, many years, as we talk about global censorship and the rise of tyranny as well. Jonathan Emord will be our special guest. He'll be back. When we come back, we'll take final open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. Let's pick it up by going to Dee in Chehalis, Washington. Hey, Dee, how are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. You all ready for Christmas?
No.
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 I'm a last-minute shopper.
Yeah.
And then I regret it.
But yeah. I'm a little bit that way, too. Sometimes it's ridiculous.
What in your life, by the way, has been your favorite Christmas present?
My favorite Christmas what?
Present that you ever got, ever.
Oh, I think goes all the way back to my childhood. I think I was about four, maybe five, and my father was a carpenter, and he made a little table and I think it was two little chairs to go with it, and painted it green. And we were going to my grandmother's house for Christmas, and I was beginning to suspect Santa Claus of, you know, that there really wasn't maybe a Santa Claus. And I had kind of seen traces of this table around. And when we got it, when we got up on Christmas morning, there was that little green table and the chairs. And I thought, well, gee, maybe there is a Santa Claus after all. And that was one of my favorite presents that my dad made for me.
That's cool. Well, what's new with you? What got you to call us tonight?
There's not a whole lot new, but I have a couple of questions.
All right.
Has any of your guests ever said whether the extraterrestrial people, or whatever they are humans? Are they humans?
Yeah, some people have said that they think they originate from underground caverns on this planet, and yes, they would be considered humans. That's come up.
The ones from underground, but what about the ones from outer space?
They would consider, if they're human, to be time travelers from planet Earth.
And they're
coming back.
And crossbreeding?
Yes. Maybe they know something that we should know.
Oh, so we aren't going to get such a strange combination after all.
If they're humans. What if they're not humans?
Well, if they're not, how could they breed?
Well, see, I think the soup bidet throughout the universe is the same. You know, I think the planets will generally possess the same kind of material, and living forms will have the same kind of material. Even though they're talking now about the carbon-based and the silicon-based.
But none of your people have expressed anything about this, right?
They've talked a little bit about that.
Uh-huh.
Over the years, we have.
Yeah. Oh, I see. So there are some of them that are kind of scientific.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that was what I was wondering. I just couldn't see how it would ever be possible between different species.
So do you have the tree up?
Pardon me?
Is your tree up? Your Christmas tree.
Oh, no, I don't know if I'm going to have one this year. I'm going to my daughter's, and I live alone here in a very, well, actually, you'd think it was rather odd. I'm 81.
Oh, good for you. You don't sound it.
I live in a commercial building, small red brick near just downtown. And I bought this commercial building and fix it all up, and it's just absolutely wonderful. My fireplace in the living room will chase you outside. It heats up everything. And I have great views and hardwood floors, and it's just a commercial building.
Well, let me ask you something about being 81, because one day I'll be 81. Do you still feel like you're 15 sometimes? Do you remember things when you were that age?
Oh, sure. I remember. You know. My goodness. Heavens, yes. And I have wonderful friends from high school that are still around. And we used to sing together. We were all very musical. My best friends, except for one, she wasn't musical, but my best friends were all musical. And we sang together. And we had a class reunion, just a few years back, and three of us sang a trio of this close harmony from the 40s in that song, Dream When You're Feeling Blue. And it was, our classmates would not let us sit down.
That was a great song. You want to sing
it?
Can you do it by yourself?
It's the absolute best for that kind of harmony that there is.
Can you do it by yourself, or do you need the other two with you?
Oh, we sang in harmony. You can't sing harmony by yourself.
All right, Dave. You have a good one.
Yeah, okay. Nice talking to you.
Take care. Let's go next to Thomas in Astatula, Florida. There you go. Thomas, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George.
Sure thing.
Very interesting guests you had this evening in regards to celestials and different.
What did you think of some of his theories, Thomas?
That perhaps there are multiple, obviously, in my opinion, given the evidence that we've seen for crafts, for instance, different shapes, different sizes, different speeds, to correlate those with different entities from different parts of the galaxy or from wherever. And has it ever been done? Like the grays driving a particular vehicle.
Good point.
The lizards perhaps came in another. And in that, to that end, what is their intentions and purpose here? Their motives. Different entities have different motives. And that there may be a struggle or some type of battle from more than one, two, three, four, five. And their purpose and contacting or being involved with our human species here.
Well, Tom, I got to tell you, not only are you from Astatula, Florida, but you're very astute, because I've always thought that these various ET races out there all possess certain types of you know, life forms and technologies. And it's very possible that, you know, they're coming here in different kinds of craft. You know, it's probably pretty close, just like Star Wars, you know?
Would you consider that they're different intentions in history? The short period that we have, that your previous guest was talking about, Truman and Roswell, and even before that, that the Nazis and their interactions with different countries are trying to cause an effect, and what is their ultimate goal?
I agree. I have a difficult time understanding why they would side with the Nazis. I just don't understand that part of it. But you know, there is more out there than we've been told. That's for sure. Jim is in Crescent City, California, and you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jim.
Hey, George, long-time listener, first-time caller. My dad used to rant and rave about your show with Art Bell years ago. But so we've been listening on and off for years.
Super.
Hey, listen, and you're a nice fellow. I mean, we really like listening to you, George. Listen, this is your last guest. I think Les. You guys mentioned something about triangular-shaped UFOs.
Right.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm a saw at the couch. 1978, about, and a long time ago, I'm coming home. Grew up in Orlando, Florida. I'm coming home in front of the old train station on Sly Boulevard, which is a dark area of town, very dark area. And they shut that train station down pretty early at night. So it must have been about 8 or 9.
Okay.
I had the top down on my old Spitfire, and I'm looking up.
Great cars, too, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. You had to have another one. I had actually two, one for parts.
Yeah, exactly.
you know, but I'm looking up, and I see three triangular-shaped objects. Now, they were pale green. I forget what you call they were rounded at each angle. They weren't pointed, but they were rounded, and there were three of them. And they were just sitting there. Now, I don't know how high they were, but they were up there pretty high, but I could see them very clearly, and I could see the pale green color. And I stopped, you know, right in the middle of the road, and I got out of the car, and I'm looking right at them. This is a quiet street, and I'm standing there looking at them, and I guess for maybe a minute, and then an OPD, an Orlando Police Cruiser, pulled up right behind me, stopped right behind me.
Yeah.
Guy gets out. He walks up to me and he goes, "What are you doing in the middle of the road?" And I said, "What's that?" I said, "What is that?" And he took a look at me, you know, sideways, and then he backed up, and then he looked up and he goes, "I don't know. I don't know." and we both stood there for a couple of minutes. And then they had just gotten been issued those little walkie talkies that kept on their shoulder. And he got it. So this was that long ago. It's like 78. And he got a call. And he goes, "I got a call. I got to go." He goes, "Get that car out of the middle of the road."
Yeah.
But that's my story. And I wanted to tell somebody that story forever. And so.
Well, what's amazing too is you saw this back as far as 78.
Yes.
You know, we weren't really getting reports of these things until the 90s. So you were 20 years ahead of us.
Wow. Wow.
That's a long time. All right, Jimmy, thanks for the call.
Hey, thank you for what you guys do. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Dale is in Loveland, Ohio. Hey, Dale, welcome.
Hey, how you doing, George?
Okay, Dale, thank you.
I tried to call last night and I couldn't get through when you had your guest that was talking about the deals with the cameras for taking your license plate.
Yep, Jim Mars, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, the bad thing about that is, let's say you're going through the light and the light is yellow and it turns red halfway through, and it takes your license plate.
Yeah.
And they've got them around Cincinnati and several of the smaller suburbs, and people have actually been known to put bags over them to keep them from taking pictures. And they haven't got caught. But another thing I'd like to say was the inaccuracy of these laser guns that the police use to
You know what? I was just talking to a friend of mine who got nailed.
Yeah.
And they said he was doing 46 and a 30. And he's convinced the thing isn't calibrated right.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, my nephew beat it. He got one, and he went to court, and he figured everything from where he was at and where the cop was at, and he went to court, and they threw it out because he said that he proved that the laser reading was false.
That's amazing, and the judge goes along with him.
He must have gone into court with all these cameras. Most people, they're intimidated. You know, I heard your guest last night say, you know, you can beat it because, I mean, you know, you get a ticket from a cop, he sees your license, he knows that you, but say you loan your car to your neighbor to go to the grocery store, and he runs a red light, and they take the picture of your license, and you get the ticket.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there's nothing they can compel you to testify that your neighbor was in your car or not. You simply say, I wasn't driving.
Right. Well, but the people that I've known that have got them, and instead of trying to beat them, the police make it so intimidating, they just go ahead and pay the fine.
Yeah, a lot of people do that. Not that I'm advocating you lie and you tell them, I don't know who that was, it wasn't
right,
me. But,
right.
But you know what, you got to fight back at the surveillance.
Right, exactly. I mean, because, I mean, you know, this we're supposed to be free. This, you know, because many years ago, you know, when George Orwell wrote 1984, you know, I've read that in Animal Farm, and I've watched these things happen.
Yeah.
I worked at a parking garage for Procter & Gamble, and I watched whenever that they took away these people's reserved parking places, and these people had waited for a long time to get these places, and I looked at them. It was in 2000, and I looked at them. I said, you know what this is? And they said, what? And I said, Animal Farm 2000.
That's right. Orwell was just too far ahead of his time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And some of the people at Procter, they looked at me, and they said, you know what? You're right. That's exactly right, because we've waited all this time because they had to be on a waiting list and they had to pay extra for reserved. But what happened was the people that was at the top, they said, we're only going to give so many parking places to so many executives, and all these people that had their reserved parking, they've got their parking taken away from them. And I mentioned, I said, it's Animal Farm 2000, and they all looked at me and they said, you know, you're right. That's exactly what they're doing to us.
That is it. Hey, thanks for the call. Let's move on to Dustin in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Hey, Dustin.
Hello, George.
Hey.
Long time. I was just going to tell you and get your thoughts on this.
All right.
When I was deployed to an unknown location to y'all, of course, I was going down a road. We were in our trucks, and there's this soldier out in the middle of the road. He was waving us to get off the road, but he had no lower body. He looked like he got hit by an IED, and he got hit hard. But he just totally waved us off the road, and we got just startled and took off. But as soon as the last truck hit the turned, the whole road just got leveled. What is your thoughts on that?
Oh, my God. What do you mean, when you say got leveled by?
It got just so many. There, it was laced with IEDs, and it just went up. And
just the whole thing went.
Everything got leveled.
Somebody was out watching you. Some guardian angel. Somebody was. It probably wasn't a soldier. It's probably an angel. No doubt about that. You were saved on that one. Let's see if we can squeeze Mike in Santa Cruz, California. Go ahead, Mike. Got about a minute or so for you.
All right. That's perfect, George. There's so many things I want to say, but I'll just go with what I'm going to say.
All right.
I can lower civic costs and fight crime at the same time.
How?
We turn off all the streetlights. Because who's out, you know, between 10 and 6 in the morning other than, you know, people cleaning up our streets and people listening to you? You know, you know, and, you know, you say we turn off the streetlights and that's going to make everyone more vulnerable. But no, because the criminals can't see either.
Well, that's a good point. That is a good point. Tom's got one quick text for me. Back in the Los Angeles studios. What do you got for us here, Tom?
Okay, well, real quick. First of all, are you missing L.A.? It's about, what, 11 degrees there?
I'll be there soon enough, right after Christmas.
Warmer here. Hey, Donna from Las Vegas texts in. She says, George, do you believe there are people who have mastered the power of physical transformation? And if so, do you think this is dangerous?
I think there are people who have mastered that power. I don't think it's particularly dangerous. I always happen to think, Tom, as you know, that good beats out evil. And if you're going to use these things for evil purposes, it's not going to work.
Well, that's like shape-shifting, right? Same thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I know we've seen that both when we're out. We have seen that.
Right. Cool. And you all ready for Christmas?
Yeah, just about. Just about.
What'd you get me?
Can't tell you.
Yeah, I wonder.
Just keep checking the mail.
Okay, kid. Take care. Catch you tomorrow night. And for the rest of you, you be safe. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everybody.